It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Hello, and welcome everybody to Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the galaxy. I'm sorry for the slightly rough and kind of jumbled intro there. It's been a couple of weeks, but this is episode 197, and it's also August 17th and a Tuesday at 8-ish p.m. Mountain Time, 9-ish p.m. Central Time, and we are your two hosts. I'm Mac, and I'm also known as Maction, and I'm joined by my friend and fellow nerd in both spirit and in digital form, Mr. Nice Guy 425, also known as Mr. Lom Galuka, stand-up comedian and stand-up guy. Lom, how you doing, man?
Dude, I'm really good, man. Had a good week. Just got back from doing some fun stuff with the kids. And this weekend did a gig in Illinois. Ironically, I moved away and got hired for a private event back there. It was dope. It was like, if any of the people who were there have decided to check out the pod, thank you for being so welcoming and making me feel good and laughing at literally every word that came out of my mouth. It was a birthday party. For a family, everybody was vaccinated, not a huge group, so I felt pretty safe. And I had a really good set, man. Had fun, hung out with the people afterwards, ate some fantastic food, and worked out a couple new jokes in between the old stuff. So it was solid, man. How about you? How have you been? What have you been up to, Mac?
Well, it's been a couple of weeks, of course. I did last week what I'm calling the fast move, where we packed up all of the big stuff, threw it in the U-Haul, and took it out to the coast, and put it in a storage unit out there. And then we are now back in rural Nebraska, just in time to pack all the, you know, the essentials, and then do what I'm gonna call the slow move in a couple of weeks. But that's not quite yet. Although, a couple of really cool and fun things that happened during the last, you know, between the last time we
spoke, yeah,
is that we found out that we made it to the slate this year again. In the podcast awards, the three categories that we made it onto the slate are, of course, People's Choice, the general category, which we're definitely not winning because we are an acquired taste.
We're a niche.
Yeah, we're niche. And then Games and Hobbies, which I think we stand a chance in. Although, to be fair, we are going up against the same people that we lost to last time, which would be things I got wrong at trivia.
Friends of the show.
Yeah, great people. And, well, you know, you guys just have to go and listen to the time that we guessed it on their show, and it was delightful. And also, this is the first year that they've had a Best Black-hosted podcast, and we are on the slate for that one as well. And so I don't know what exactly our odds are in all of them, but at the very least, it's in the panel's hands now to decide, and I'm cautiously optimistic.
I forgot to tell you this. I got a DM from someone who said that they're voting for us for Best Black Hosted Podcast on Twitter. So we got at least one vote. So...
yes.
Sometimes, Mac, you know, I am black. You are not. Skin color, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter when it comes to Best Hosted Black Podcast. It's all about the flavor that you bring to the table when you're talking about video games, man.
I like to think that we complement each other in that respect. But anyway, here we are talking about our lives and everything else, but that's not what we're really here for, is it?
I don't think so. I do want to mention one thing. I'm recording in the basement now. And so like this, all this behind me, like didn't have time to clean up after the kids. So didn't have time to put up any of my Marvel artwork or anything. But next week it'll look a lot more crisp and clean, but you're right, Mac. Why don't we start by doing what we do best and hop right into that gaming news, my friend. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is episode
197
of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Lots of fun stuff to talk about this week. Mac, are you going to talk about ROMs for your legalese?
I was not intending to.
That's our topic of the week. Just wanted to make sure. So, let's jump into gaming news, though. So, first news story comes from IGN.com, written by a person by the name of Chris Reed. Good news, Simpsons fans. You'll soon be able to bring home the classic arcade game, The Simpsons, made by Arcade 1UP. This machine includes the classic four-player Simpsons beat-em-up arcade game, plus The Simpsons Bowling. Just like the original, the machine has four-player inputs, and one is equipped with Wi-Fi, which is dope. Or rather, this one is equipped with Wi-Fi, the whole cabinet. So you can play it online co-op as well, which I think is a great idea. It's up for pre-order now. You can get it at Walmart, and it's scheduled to ship in late fall. You can get it at Walmart for $529, or you can get the bundle for $699. Now, what is the bundle, you ask? It includes the machine and riser, plus a matching Simpsons stool and a tin wall sign. Now, that bundle is $699. It has all the original artwork. Mac, like, are you converted to Arcade 1UP? Like, if someone wants a Simpsons arcade, like the authentic original, probably a couple thousand. Arcade 1UP version, $529. What do you think about these replicas?
It's certainly nice. I'm a big fan of anything that makes it easier for people to play a game. Whether we're talking about them playing on their, like, you know, like putting it on more devices, or reproductions. I mean, just so long as nobody tries to pass it off as the original, I think it's great.
Yeah, and obviously they've gone through the licensing, or rather the proper channels to make sure that there's no licensing issues, right? So I think this is dope. I'm kind of a purist when it comes to stuff like this, because I already have a MAME cabinet, which many of you have maybe seen. Let me just flash that for you guys so you can see. I have this big MAME arcade thing that I built. And so I have access to all the games, right? There's something about original hardware that just makes the world go round. So, Mac, a couple questions for you about arcade stuff. First arcade game you ever played? Question number one, if you remember. And second question is, what arcade would you like to see remade by Arcade 1UP, if you could have a choice?
Man, the first question's a real rough one to answer. Because while I'm sure that I played arcade games before, the strongest memories that I have of playing arcade games wasn't until I actually worked at an arcade. And that wasn't until I was, like, in college. Yeah. So I'm going to say I think the first one I ever played was probably Lethal Enforcers. I think that was... I think that's as far back as I can recollect.
For me, it was either Simpsons or Ninja Turtles. I can't remember which it was, but it was one of those two. So I'm kind of excited that they're remaking this. I won't buy it, but it's kind of cool.
And I would certainly love to see those types of games get a one-up treatment. Something with the light guns or something fairly approximating that. It'd be fun to have Time Crisis and stuff available for playing if you wanted the arcade experience.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Now, I'll tell you this. I don't really like the idea of buying these, but if they made a Gauntlet Legends or an NFL Blitz, I might be willing to get into it. Because Gauntlet Legends is so hard to find, and it's so hard to ROM, like, to MAME it. Like, I just have never been able to get it work. So, third choice honorable mention would be Donkey Kong. But anyway, let's keep things moving for the sake of time. Let's talk about the Steam Deck some more.
Okay.
I'm so hyped for this, Mac. I'm so excited for it. And I know that you are too. Here's what it says, GameInformer.com by Marcus Stewart. Valve's Steam Deck has impressed a lot of people since its reveal. After all, the company effectively designed its own version of the Switch to play your Steam library on the go. That's pretty cool, and it's proven to be quite a draw given its pre-order frenzy and early hands-on impressions have been largely positive. Xbox boss Phil Spencer is among those who got to take the device for a test drive, and he recently expressed his happiness with the product, particularly in how well it runs Microsoft-published software. Spencer tweeted that he's been messing around with it for the last week and recently visited Valve to discuss the handheld, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line, Mac, he says that it works really well with Xbox games. So if you have Xbox Game Pass and you have a Steam Deck, you can play all of those games on the go. And it's important to note that there's a little game called Back for Blood that's going to be releasing in October And it will be on Game Pass day one. So, Mac, have you done any more reading on the Game Pass? Are you still, or on the Steam Deck? Are you still as hyped for this as you were a couple weeks ago? You still keeping that pre-order? Where are you at with it as we learn more and more?
I am still pretty excited for it. I am still keeping the pre-order. And I think I'm going to be, maintain this hype level of mine till the release, because it sounds great to me. And even though, like, I pre-ordered the smaller version, the one with the lesser amount of memory, it is supposedly capable of being upgraded, so I'll buy some expanded memory to throw in there. And I'm looking forward, I'm really looking forward to having something a little less cumbersome than my computer, especially because once I get to the coast, you know, full-time living there, that things are going to be a little bit in flux for a bit. So, I mean, I'm definitely not going to have a Steam Deck in time for it to matter, but maybe it'll help curb some of my need for gameplay there when things are a little hard to shuffle around with the desktop. So I'm pretty excited, and I think I'm gonna get some use out of mine.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it too. I almost wonder if it's one of those things where in my mind I think it's cooler than it's gonna be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like virtual reality is fun, and I will talk more about that later when I talk about what I've been playing. But I don't play it nearly as much as I thought I would, right? I played Half-Life Alyx, and now I bust it out every once in a while, but I just don't play it as much. And I wonder if that's because it's a niche thing, or I wonder if it's just because it's easier to play on a TV. And so I wonder if the Steam Deck is going to be the same thing. If in my mind I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna hop in bed at night, I'm gonna play this game real quick, or you know, play with my friends or whatever. And when I actually get it, it's gonna be like, well, this is nice, and I use it once a month. I don't know. I don't think that's what will happen. I mean, when I got the Nintendo Switch, I played it a ton. And I think this is going to be the same thing. And I think, quite frankly, Mac, when you come out for a road trip, or when I go see you for a road trip, and we want to just sit around and play some games, like, now we can have our Steam Decks, and we can literally, like, we could hypothetically go to a park. Like, nice weather, you know, sit outside on a park bench and just, like, kill zombies, right? And enjoy nature at the same time. So in my mind, there's a lot of potential here.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, I've got at least one or two trips planned that involve me taking a train. And so I'm kind of excited to have a Steam Deck, you know, and be able to play a little bit on a train. It'll be nice.
Yes, dude, and just put in some AirPods or air headphones, whatever, and you're in your own world, and you just do your own thing. Now, Galvatron asked a really interesting question in the chat. He says, I wonder if you could play Epic Game Store games on Steam Deck, or if it will be walled off. I seem to remember reading that it's walled off in the beginning. But at the same time, like, I'm 90% sure I read that. At the same time, though, they said that you can do anything on the Steam Deck that you can do on a PC. So I can't help but believe that at some point that will be opened up. Cool. Well, let's keep things moving. What else do we got in the news front this week? Mac, let's talk about Cyberpunk 2077. A game that released to much critical criticism, not critical acclaim, but critical criticism. And, you know, it was very, very buggy when it came out. It came out late last year. It's in the news again. And here's what it says. This is by Matt Kim on IGN. CD Projekt Red shared the list of changes coming in the 1.3 patch, along with the details about the first free DLC, which will also be included in the upcoming update. Firstly, the upcoming DLC included in the 1.3 patch will all be cosmetic. It will include two jackets, one vaguely looks like the red jacket from Akira, character in the game, a new car, and a new outfit for Johnny Silverhand. As previously announced, the DLC in Cyberpunk will be free, while the bigger narrative expansions will be paid. This is the same DLC versus expansion model used for The Witcher 3, also made by CD Projekt Red. Mac, it's important to also note that today, Best Buy had a deal where you could purchase Cyberpunk 2077 for $10. So it's reached the point they're basically giving it away. I picked up the PlayStation 4 copy to play on my PS5. But my question for you is, at what point do they just give up and make this free to play? Like, it's $10. They said DLC will be free. All the DLC is cosmetic. are they just treating gamers like they're dumb at this point? It's kind of, I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. $10 is $10, man. And at what point will they start just making it free to play? Ah, gosh, I don't know. I've wondered for a long time, since you mentioned Game Pass earlier, I've wondered for a long time as to how much is the dev actually getting when they sign up to have their game on Game Pass, because obviously Microsoft's giving them a cut of, you know, of Game Pass stuffs, Game Pass revenue, and I wonder what the cut is and what that comes out to be, especially because if or what Microsoft or what any other service that's offering a Game Pass or Game Pass like service, what they shell out when you do that. Does somebody actually have to download it via Game Pass in order for you to get that cut, or do you just get like a cut based on what they think the popularity is versus how many Game Pass subscribers? It seems very unlikely, but it's one of those where you just, you can only guess until you know. That being said, if it winds up being the case where sales of Cyberpunk 2020 are whatever at 2077 amount, what did I say, 2020?
You said 2020. It's all good. Just wanted to.
Okay. It was released in 2020. Ha! I won.
It was.
And and at some point in time, it might make more sense to, you know, go that route and be, air quotes, free to play via Game Pass if what you're getting is a cut from downloads or even a cut from just being available on there to make Game Pass a good, an incentive to get the Game Pass. I don't know where those tipping points are. We would have to have more data, but I could certainly see it going that way before it would go free to play just in general. But, you know, I mean, that's just me.
Yeah, we're still waiting on the next gen update. We're still waiting on story DLC. And when I say we, I mean people who bought it day one. I just bought it this morning, and I haven't even picked it up yet from Best Buy. I just haven't ordered. Someone in the chat, good friend CV Tech. It's been a while, dude. Good to see you here. He said he just tried to go buy it right now, and it is sold out. I would recommend you go to your local Best Buy and try to pick one up. I bet there's copies on the shelves. I bet there are. Actually, it's too late. What am I talking about? Depending on where you're at, it might be too late. But anyway, that's what's going on with Cyberpunk. One last story I want to share, and this is in the same vein. This is talking about games that trying to make a not a comeback, but like trying to kind of stay relevant. The Last of Us Part Two, not struggling to stay relevant at all, but a new thing came out about the multiplayer. This is on GamesRadar.com, and here's what it says. It's written by Jordan Gerblick. Naughty Dog could have once been working on a battle royale mode for The Last of Us 2, judging from some newly unearthed multiplayer assets. In a new video from prolific The Last of Us 2 data miner Specializer, we can see what seems to be a prop displaying a big multiplayer map with several locations from The Last of Us 2 single player, including Adler Park, Camelito, and Port of Camelito. The map also includes several other points, blah, blah, blah. Mac, bottom line is, it looks like there was some data mining that showed they were working on multiplayer at one point. Not a surprise, because we had heard that they were thinking about doing that, but just didn't want to do it at release. Now there's rumors of a battle royale mode. Like, The Last of Us came out over a year ago. The Last of Us Part 2 came out June of 2020. At what point do you say, just leave it alone, right? Like, Neil Druckmann has said they're not going to have any more story DLC. Do you like when your single-player games have multiplayer added on, like, a year later? I don't know. I'm curious, honestly.
I mean, it depends.
Chasm multiplayer.
Hey, I would be all about it.
Would you really?
Absolutely. I don't know exactly how you would do it. Maybe it would be maybe it would be sort of a brawl mode, but heck yeah, I'd go for it. And I would praise James and the crew for putting a multiplayer together. But I mean, yeah, I don't see how this could be anything but good news for people who like the lore, like the game itself, being able to try something new out. Did you ever play Conker's Bad Fur Day back in the day?
I haven't, but I've heard about it. N64 classic. I never played.
Yeah, an N64 classic, and I played the single player, the campaign, but the multiplayer was, and this is gonna sound weird, but I felt like the multiplayer is kind of where the game shone a lot for me.
Huh, interesting.
And I mean, it's weird, it's kooky, and I felt very much like, and I'm not privy to the details of the construction of the game, and I haven't exactly researched it lately, so I'm just, you know, spitballing here, but it certainly felt like the multiplayer was something that was added on later in development, but it sure turned out great.
And I guess the thing with The Last of Us Part 2 is it was so story-driven, it was so gritty, and they literally said, we're not going to have any more story DLC. We're not going to do a Left Behind DLC like we did with the original Last of Us. We're just going to leave it. And that's what I think they should do, because it ended in a way that made sense, right? It set it up for the third game. Now, that said, do I want more Last of Us? Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know if I want it in the form of multiplayer, and I certainly don't know if I want it in the form of Battle Royale. Over a year after the game has come out, when we're coming into, you know, Battlefield, Call of Duty, Switch OLED, Steam Deck, you know, all these other games that are, you know, Back for Blood, all this other stuff that's going to come out in fall, I just don't know. And then, you know, if you get past fall, it's a year and a half, and is anyone really wanting to pop it in and play multiplayer? People who are that into it play factions on Last of Us Part 1. We're a little bit over on our time for news, but that has been our news for the week.
All right, well, now that we've looked around at what's going on today, let's look into the past. This last week in years before, and we have had a crazy exciting week. The beginning of August is always just packed. So obviously things that you probably already knew. In 1998, the release of the Sega Genesis. That was awesome. I got a Sega Genesis. I was always a little bit behind on the console releases, but I had a Sega and I loved it. In 1987, just a couple years before, we had Metroid released on the Nintendo. Obviously, I mean, just 2 years, what a huge jump in capability, processing, and everything between those two times. You know, Genesis in 89, Metroid in 87, just, you know, blows the mind. We saw the release in 1997 on the PS1 of Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver. So this game, huge deal to me when I was growing up, so much so that my first email address, the first email address I ever made, was based on that video game. And I'm not going to tell you what the email address is.
Tell us so everyone can email you.
But I will say that, it was just based off of Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver. Loved that game to death. Which is also kind of fitting, because in it, Raziel's like undead. He's like, well, it's interesting because like they're like vampires. You know what? We're getting too much into it. In 2000, the release for PS1 as well of Chrono Cross, terrific game. It had some risks. It really took those risks, and some of them paid off, some of them didn't. It is kind of notable that the story is just really leaves all these questions. It's a full, rich world. There's all these different branching points, and you kind of don't really know what's really going on until basically a lore dump right near the end of the game. But, you know, which is kind of unfortunate. I feel like that could have been done a little bit better. But, you know, when was the last time I made a successful game? Never. So there we go. But the thing I really want to focus on today, Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, what is it?
It comes in 2016. It was released for the PC, called Another Metroid 2 Remake, or AM2R. Now, this is... There was a Game Boy game released called Metroid 2 Samus Returns, or Return of Samus. I forget. It's one Return of the Samus. Other. Yeah. Return of Samus. There we go. And then in 2015, Nintendo's people started work on Metroid Samus Returns or Return of Samus. You know, anyway, they started working on those. So another Metroid 2 remake was a fan project in order to take that original Game Boy game, pull it forward and put it, release it on the PC with basically a lot of quality of life updates, give it a fresh polish on the graphics, make it a more playable experience, and also help to fill in little bits of lore there. It's kind of not just a fan game, but it's like a fan remake slash fan port. Fan remake, fan fix. And yeah, fantastic, amazing. So not just a solid fan work, but it also got DMCA'd by Nintendo. Like I said, Nintendo was already working on their own grab on the Metroid 2 intellectual property, which of course they released, I think, a year later. But it got DMCA'd by Nintendo, so if you weren't on top of getting your hands on that, much like buying these copies of Cyberpunk 2020 on BestBuy.com at all, then you don't really have an option to get your hands on it now. But it goes deeper. The Game Awards of that year, they were sponsored by Nintendo, and another Metroid 2 remake was on the docket for Best Fan Game for the year. And Nintendo threatened to pull its sponsorship of the event if they didn't get rid of another Metroid 2 remake.
Really?
Not a great look for Nintendo, but, you know, Game Awards did pull that, and they pulled, I think they pulled Pokemon Sapphire? No, not Sapphire, Crystal. One of the fan-made Pokemon games as well that was also up for an award. But anyway, neither here nor there. Another Metroid 2 remake. Many, you know, press F to pay your respects to the game that's no longer available. But those of us who did get to play it, it is solid, it is great, and there may still be copies floating around somewhere because nothing has ever truly gone from the internet.
Ooh.
And that's all I have to say about that. And that's what we have for video game history this week.
And Mac, you could not have set things up better with that last statement that nothing is ever technically gone from the internet, because we're literally going to talk about that premise for the topic of the week, a segment where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Now, Mac, I know you follow legalese pretty closely, and I know you follow ROMs pretty closely. We're going to talk
indeed
about this is from Kotaku.com by Zach Zweizen. This story has been all over the internet. ROM Universe, a website where folks could download pirated copies of various Nintendo games and even pay a premium to get faster downloads, was sued into oblivion back in May of this year. But Nintendo wasn't done after suing the site for $2.1 million. In new court docs, a judge has ordered the owner of the site to destroy all of his Nintendo ROMs or face legal consequences. ROM Universe was first sued by Nintendo in 2019 for what its lawyers called brazen and mass-scale infringement. Nintendo won that lawsuit in May and was awarded $2.1 million in damages, which would be paid by ROM Universe owner Matthew Storman in $50 monthly payments. Oh, man. That's going to take him a while to pay that off, if any of us are decent at math here, at least in theory. However, in July, Nintendo returned to court after Storman failed to make his first $50 payment. Come on, bro. What are you doing? What are you doing? Just pay Nintendo. Come on. The game publisher requested a permanent injunction against Storman as it feared he might be willing to bring the site back online. And now there's more. And this goes on and on and on and on. Mac, number one, I mean, I feel like this is petty by Nintendo. But I guess my question is more about the game preservation aspect. Like, they make them delete the games. Does that do anything? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do want to just say real quick that one of the things that Nintendo has leaned on for this request to get all of the stuff deleted is the idea that he himself has used and put forward in part of the reason why it's like $50 increment, you know, $50 payments, is because he said, hey guys, I like don't have money and I'm not really gonna get money, and ROM Universe was kind of how I supported myself before, so like I am not going to be able to pay you stuff. And they're like, fine, we'll take $50 increments. Anyway, so as part of that, though, they're leaning on the, hey, this was how he supported himself before. He's not even paying the bare minimum. We're worried he's going to do it again, make him destroy it all, instead of just have it all taken down. Just to throw out there where kind of Nintendo's coming from.
That makes sense, because honestly, like, let's be honest, this was not the only ROM site, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if he had these on torrent, those ROMs are still out there, right?
Oh, yeah. And that very much comes to answering the second question, which is, you know, do we lose anything? I find it difficult to believe that there is anything unique to his collection that would be lost. And like you said, it's just so easy for that to have been distributed in various ways. I mean, I, for example, certainly do not have a piece, an external hard drive that contains NES ROMs. Nope. No, I do not. And you're crazy for thinking that. So, yeah. But I just don't think there's anything to be said about his specific collection. It's possible, but it's not very likely. People who are very interested and invested in the preservation aspect of stuff are probably not the ones hosting sites that are getting Nintendo's attention.
Right. I guess, on the one hand, I get what Nintendo is doing. Like, if you create something, right, and you have the rights to it, what right does someone have to go put all of that stuff on the internet for free? You know, they don't have that right. But I do not believe that they are actually taking that much money from Nintendo.
Oh,
that
sure.
would have otherwise been purchased. Now, granted, Nintendo re-releases old games all the time.
All the time? It's kind of been a more recent event now that they've got their own in-house emulators that they're working on. But I mean, like, you know, previous to the NES Classic, I feel like it had been a long time since they had done remakes, re-releases of a lot of the ROMs that are actually in question. You know what I mean?
I would agree with some, but they did have the eShop on the Nintendo Wii. So, I mean, you could purchase classic games on there. And so, I mean, for $5, you could buy Mario 1, right? And that's been going on since Nintendo finally built a console that could connect to the internet. But I don't know, man. I just feel like I think it is petty by Nintendo, but I also see their side. Now, as someone who wants these games to be accessible to all people, the reality is you're not going to find a copy of, what's that game we really like? Little Samson. You're not going to find a copy of Little Samson, you know, to enjoy. And if you do, you're going to have to shell out several hundred dollars for it, and you're going to have to make sure you have original hardware. And it's basically a piece of history. Do you want to put that in a console? Probably not. So I think that ROMs serve a greater purpose than just giving people free games. I think it allows people to experience games that otherwise they wouldn't.
Yeah. You know, nice guy, I know that this is not really within the confines of today's conversation, but I think one of these days we ought to tackle what we, and by we, I mean you, me, and those of our listeners and watchers who are here live with us. I think one of these days we ought to nail down what we think is the right amount of time for copyright. For, like, you know, copyright on the ROMs or the intellectual property. What's the right amount of time for somebody to profit off of the work that they've made? Especially if they're not doing new releases of it. But that's just a side one that I think's a fun conversation for the future.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And a couple comments in the chat to put a pin in this. CV Tech says, the Xbox Microsoft lets you pay $20 to run emulators, and I love it. I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to. If you could elaborate on that, I'd love to hear more. And then Galvatron says, this would be solved if Nintendo would do a Game Pass and all you can play service with their old games for $10. It would make a ton and put a lot of pirates out of business. He said business with a D. But they're so stubborn, backwards, and self-defeating that they would never do it. They've kind of done it with Nintendo Switch Online. They give you access to a ton of NES games and SNES games. It's not quite what you're saying, but it's the closest we'll probably ever see. All right, that's been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart, and you know how it goes. We want you to say whether or not you think this is worthy of your money, that's a kickstart, or whether it should be kicked out of here, and that's a kick. I'm putting a link in the chat right now so that you all can take a look, and we can discuss this live. For the first time ever, this game is called Notestruck. It is from a game company out of Spain. They are looking for nearly $60,000 to bring this game to life. So, what is it? It is a turn-based rhythm RPG done in voxel animation, which is kind of the 3D model equivalent of a pixel. I love the art style, and I've long been a fan of rhythm-based games. Rhythm-based RPGs are a little less common to come by, but you know me, I like my Dance Dance Revolution. I especially like my Pump It Up and video games that incorporate rhythm into them, especially in new and exciting ways.
Pistol Whip.
Pistol Whipped, yes, Pistol Whipped. I love games that incorporate rhythm. Sometimes the more incorporated, the better. So in this game, it's got rockin' music, man. The power ballads really do it for me in there. Now it is, they are looking at 15 euros, which is 18 US dollars, as the early bid buy-in for the game, as well as the next two games in the series. That comes included if you kickstart it. This is, technically speaking, Notestruck, is what they're crowdfunding right now, is the first in the trilogy of Notestruck games that they're designing and that they're making. So yeah, if you get it on the early board or if you kickstart, you'll get this as well as the other two. Now, it doesn't do anything super new in the turn-based RPG genre. It follows the usual teens on a grand adventure in a new and different world, trying to get home, that sort of thing. And it needs 15 days. It's got 15 days left to go, and it kind of needs a lot of help and support. It's nowhere close to its $60,000 goal, which is kind of a shame. I really like the concept. If you're the type of person, though, that likes early access, extra access, springing up to $50 gets you the alpha and beta versions, as well as access to the prototype builds, which is actually something that I would consider because it looks great. Okay, so let's talk some of the downsides here. It is to be delivered in late 2024.
What?
Yeah, 3 years is a long time to wait on development, which indicates that it's pretty early on in the process. Additionally, there's no playable demo. So while I like the concept, there's nothing for us to actually look at and touch and feel. I mean, the price is right, the concept is rockin', and it checks off a lot of my boxes, but there are still some that it doesn't. Mr. Nice Guy, what's your take?
I mean, I'm a trusting person, but I just feel like sometimes people abuse trust, and I don't care who these people are. Mm-hmm. Unless they're Shigeru Miyamoto, or, oh, his name leaves me, Metal Gear Solid guy, the gentleman who made
Inafune?
That game. Like, what's that?
I'm going to ruin his name. Inafune?
No, I should know his name. This is unacceptable. But anyway, you get my point. Like, unless you're like a really established individual, like, what right do you have to ask people for their money without a demo you know, for a game that's not coming out for 3 years. I think it's unacceptable. Like, that's all I really have to say. I don't care about the game style. I don't care about it being unique. I don't care about the graphics. I don't care about anything other than the fact that you're asking people for their money for a game that is coming in 3 years on a platform that has no recourse if the game does not ever come out.
Yeah, that is true. It's a long time to wait. You've got no recourse if things go sideways. I agree with you. And you know me, this is precisely why I insist on demos, because, you know, prove to us that you can bring it all together in one cohesive whole. Hideo Kojima, that's who you
Hideo, remember. Hideo Kojima.
Hideo, yeah. That's right.
Kojima. Sorry, see, Kojima, I'm just... how could I forget?
We'll fix that in post.
Thanks. Thanks, CV Tech.
So, there's a lot that I love about it. I love the concept. I think it's great. But yeah, no playable demo and no real, nothing really there to give us the confidence that we need to wait those 3 years. And that certainly has me saying kick.
I wouldn't have really even been on the fence if it wasn't 3 years out. This just doesn't look that appealing to me. It looks like a step above Minecraft. It kind of reminds me of Gumby. Did you ever watch Gumby back in the day?
Yeah.
The claymation character, like something about the graphics kind of remind me of that. And that to me is creepy. I didn't really like Gumby that much as a kid. So for all of those reasons and the fact that it's so far of a wait to get it, I'm out.
Well, we wish them the best, as we do with anybody that we take a look at during Kick or Kickstart. But unfortunately, as much as I might like the concept, and as much as Mr. Nice Guy's skepticism prevails, we say no thank you, Kick. Wish you the best, and here's to hoping that you guys can get funded. But it will not be on this show. And that's been Kick or Kickstart.
Well, now it's time for a segment called Nerd Flex. A segment where you, the viewer, try to stump the host, and sometimes you do. Mac, do we have anything we need to follow up on previous episodes?
Keep in mind there are several, and I do mean several, unclaimed sound tests. And what are those? Those are mystery sounds that we've played every about fourth episode of Two Nerds in a Pod, wherein you can identify the sound and you can win a prize if you're the first one to correctly identify it. But we have some of those available. Keep your ears open. But this is the time for you guys to stump us.
Yeah, and Mac, we're kind of in a bind. This is interesting. So I go to open the test bank, and This is crazy. We can edit this out later if you want. And it says, I'm very sorry, but Google is currently not allowing the kind of connection needed to access data on published Google Sheets. And then it has a big frowny face.
That's right. So, there was a thing recently where Google did a thing to change permissions and such. So, yeah, so we don't have access to the test bank.
Yeah, so it's okay. We cannot access the test bank. So if you guys are here live and you have a trivia question you'd like to ask, no pressure. But you can type that in the chat. We'll be a little bit more flexible this week.
Well, in that case, then, why don't I just skip along to Legalese, and if it so happens that we get some in the meantime, we come back to it, and if not, we just, we just call it on this one. so, that brings us to Legalese.
Legalese.
All right, so what we're going to talk about today happens to be the a bit of legislation, actually, that is going on. This is being proposed by Blumenthal and a few others in the U.S. Congress. So what is it exactly? It is, and I will quote from it, a bill to promote competition, reduce gatekeeper power in the app economy, increase choice, improve quality, and reduce costs for consumers. The short title is, it is the Open App Markets Act. As I said, it's being put forward. It's still legislation that is a work in progress. How work in progress is it? We'll get there. But I did want to just cover some of the broad strokes and be like, and just throw it out there. And then ask, who do you think this is applying to? So we're going to talk there. Okay. It is supposed to protect competition among, you know, apps by preventing the requiring of the specific in-app payment system. To prevent the any requirement of favorable processing, or sorry, a favorable pricing by a app store, to prevent an app store from offering discount pricing, prevent an app store from taking action against you, punitive action, if you offer different pricing or other methods in different stores. So that's how it's supposed to protect competition, is it's going to allow you to do those without reprisals. How is it supposed to protect communication? It's going to protect communication by not allowing an app store to restrict the direct communication between the app developer and the app users.
Okay.
It's supposed to protect business by saying that app stores cannot use privileged information in order to compete with the app developer. And it's supposed to protect versatility by preventing the requirement of the use of a first-party app store, preventing a app store from barring you from using third-party app stores. And it's supposed to allow access to you, presumably the developer, for back-end stuff in order to develop apps. And here's where we get to the fun part where it's obvious just how not finished this is. The next section in the bill is, this is to protect user security and privacy. And then it has nothing underneath how it's supposed to protect user information, security, and privacy. And it just says, except for necessary steps for privacy, security, and safety and prevention of crime underneath it. So it's just like, you can't do anything in A, and A is blank. And then it says, except as required to undergo B, and B is those things. You know, protect privacy, security, and safety and prevention of crime. So yeah, again, very, very misleading. But Mr. Nice Guy, does that sound like it's being done for any specific reason or with any specific thought in mind, perhaps?
It reminds me of the Epic v. Apple lawsuit, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's interesting because it's practically a list of the beefs that Epic brought with respect to Apple. Now, I just have to say, once again, you guys, you know me, but to anybody such as, I don't know, maybe panel voters who are listening for the first time, I would just like to express that I am no fan of Apple. I'm also no fan of Epic. However, Epic is very much, in this whole Epic v. Apple thing, they're the person riding on the bike who sticks the stick into the front wheel and then, you know, is on the ground going, why does this happen to me? And they really are, because they knew everything that they were doing was going to get them, you know, kicked off the platform when they did it. And don't let them for a second sell you on any of that stuff. Now, back to this legislation now. Like I said, very much work in progress. It is clearly a reaction to the Epic v. Apple stuff that's going on. Mr. Nice Guy, you're 100% right, as are those in the comments here who are also similarly identifying that. Not the biggest fan. I'm a fan of some of it, and I feel like some of it is good. Unfortunately, I feel like there are a lot of things that are overly broad. There are some things in here that are really good and probably should happen. I like the idea of not being able to take these things, and I very much so would like an increase in competition. But the one piece that I'm really excited about, that I really want to know about, that is protecting user security and privacy. It's something that there is much too little of. And while I'm not crazy about the overall, you know, idea of this Open App Markets Act, if what it winds up doing is, you know, a couple of things that I don't like, but really shoring up user privacy and security on apps, then you better believe I'm willing to take the bad with the good there. So anyway, this is something that I'll keep my eyes on. I'll report back, Mr. Nice Guy, if we wind up getting some more solid stuff to work on. But this is definitely something out of Blumenthal's office that I think is, you know, this was last revised about a week ago. And so I think it's something worth keeping your eyes open. Keep an ear out for the Open App Markets Act. And we're going to see how this develops. But that's just been a little bit of legalese for you.
Awesome. Mac, such a dope legal expert in quotations, right? We can't say expert without quotes because then we could get in trouble, right? Well, it is time to end the show. But before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms and services. And if you're here live, you have a job to do. Let us know in the chat what you've been into. Mac, what you been watching and playing this past week?
I have sadly not been playing much. My gamepad, you know, various things have just been packed and they're either on the other side of the country or I've just been busy sort of recovering. I have been doing old-fashioned pen and paper crossword puzzles, as well as playing Dungeons and Dragons, a little bit of GURPS, so some virtual TTRPGs. That's been fun.
Nice.
But that's about it for me. As for watching, though, Mrs. the Mac and I, we've been on the Buffy train lately. So the late 90s Buffy the Vampire Slayer, we've been watching. I also gave a little Netflix show called Centaur World a shot, and I am very much on the fence about it, my man. It's like...
On the fence, huh?
Yeah, it's like episode one really hit hard and hit great, and episode two got better. Episode three kind of went back for me.
What's it called? Centaur what?
Centaur World. And it's, I feel like in some ways it's got some interesting ideas, but I feel like it tries too hard to be meme-y right out of the gate. You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff that's going on. A lot of the characters that it's like, I don't know. Maybe it'll be big with the youths, but maybe I'm too old. So that's what I've been watching.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, I'm reading about it right now, and this is on, I think, Polygon. There's a quote. I'm not going to read it right now. But yeah, it sounds like it might be silliness. We have too many cartoons, dude. We have too many. Anime aside, like, we got South Park, we got The Simpsons, we got Family Guy, we got, like, every comedian has come out with a show. Bob's Burgers, F is for Family. There's just, like, so many cartoons designed for people our age. There's a lot.
There can never be too many cartoons.
Remember when it was just Simpsons and South Park back in the day? Then Family Guy came, and that was like the big third. King of the Hill was kind of there for a little bit. We got the Boondocks, and that was the best one. Anyway, as far as what I've been watching and playing, lots of stuff on HBO Max. As far as what I've been playing, Back for Blood, dude. Oh my gosh. I even messaged you, and I was like, I'm going to try to like peer pressure him into downloading this, even though he's only going to have one day to play the open beta. It's freaking fun, man. And I think we had played it a few months ago during one of the closed betas. Didn't we get a couple rounds in, if I remember correctly?
Not with me, unfortunately. I was able to get a couple of rounds in, but it was just with random folks.
Yeah, maybe I played with some other people from the community. I can't remember, but I really enjoyed it. And I played it again this time, and I enjoyed it even more. It's one of those games that's going to be a fun, hey, let's play this, you know, once a week or once every couple weeks. But I feel like once you burn through the content, it might get a little bit boring. So It'll be interesting to see how much longevity it has. But I do think at release, it's going to be fire. It's going to be great. And it's going to be on Game Pass. So it's going to have a huge community. And it's going to be crossplay, which I think is so important with games nowadays. It's basically Left 4 Dead 3. And that's all I really got to say. Like, that was my highlight of the week, was playing that game. What are people into in the chat? People a little quiet this week, Mac. Why don't you just read it all, man?
Sure. Rolf has been playing Humankind, Car Mechanic Simulator 2021, and Slay the Spire. All solid choices. A.R. Wilson's been playing NBA 2K21, Madden 21, The Show 21, and NHL 21. A.R. Wilson likes the sports games. Sports go sports! And Galvatron has been watching Suicide Squad, The Outpost, Chinatown, Transformers War for Cybertron Kingdom, and playing Hades on Game Pass, Shaq Fu, A Legend Reborn, which is apparently really funny, The Ascent, Cyber Shadow, and F1 2020.
Well, on that note, I say we will end the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're one of the people listening to our little pod for the Podcast Awards, thank you so much for tuning in. Please vote. If you enjoyed what you heard, we'll be back next week, same bat place, same bat time. Keep it nerdy.
See ya.